Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. And today's guest is John Wynn, sound artist, whose exhibition started on Wednesday, I think. Is that right, John?
It did. The opening night was Wednesday evening, yeah.
So yesterday was the first public opening of the exhibition.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this exhibition called Soundtrap 4, a sound installation at Beaconsfield Gallery, 22 Newport Street, Vauxhall, London, SE 116AY. It runs from the 10th of September to the 18th of October. And we are privileged to have sound artist John Wynn in the studio today, who's going to talk about this installation.
Surely it's not that much of a privilege. But
it is indeed.
A slight correction. My installation isn't entitled Soundtrap. That was the Soundtrap is the ongoing series of residencies that Beaconsfield has undertaken.
Right.
And I've confused matters by not titling my piece.
So. Ah, okay. So it's not even called Untitled. It literally has nothing
by which to
identify it.
No.
All right. Well, I went to the opening on Wednesday, and it is an extremely impressive installation, and I would urge all the listeners to get down there if they can. We could talk briefly about the space itself, which is an extraordinary building, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's very unusual in that it's like a very large cube with an extremely high ceiling. And as you go in, the floor almost gives the impression of sloping upwards towards the far side. Is that right, or is that a bit of an illusion?
It has a definite sort of rake up to the back. The building, the original building, was another two-thirds larger than it is now. What remains is the girls' classroom of what was a ragged school. So it was financed by a philanthropist and put up to educate deprived children in the neighborhood.
Right. But the dimensions of the space are very unusual, aren't they?
Yeah, it's huge, high ceilings. I mean, I can't imagine with the acoustics in there what it was like with a room full of girls from deprived families.
Yeah, I mean, when you look up, it looks almost as though they've taken one floor out. It could have been sort of almost two separate rooms divided by a floor, couldn't it?
Yeah, it's true. I don't know exactly why the ceiling is so high in that classroom, but it was a room in which they presumably sort of often would cram as many pupils in as they could get, and I think the raked floor probably just helped sort of to, you know, as a matter of crowd control or being able to see the...
I suppose it's almost like a sort of cinema space in a way, in that, the as you say, it's a raked floor, so the seats at the back would have been somehow higher than the ones at the front. But as you go in, obviously the first thing that strikes you about the installation is this enormous pyramid of loudspeakers, which the point of the pyramid is in the furthest corner going up towards the ceiling. So you've got the combination of this incredibly high ceiling, the raked floor, and then this sort of pyramid of loudspeakers, which, how many, 300?
There are 300 speakers in the piece, Well, I worked in the space for a long time, basically over the summer, and the idea was that the way that gallery likes to work is to have people not bring a piece and install it in the gallery, but to work there and work with the space and make something that's site-specific. So I worked in the space. I had a couple of assistants, Kimo and Antoine, who were indispensable, moving 300 speakers around and trying out various sort of sculptural possibilities with them, and sort of bearing in mind while we were doing it both the acoustic possibilities of whatever sculptural forms we were trying out, but also how it worked visually in the space. And so I've kind of almost accentuated that rake of the floor so that it kind of helps visually kind of give the impression of this sort of the horizon is full of speakers, kind of.
And all the speakers are they're all different, of course. I mean, they're mostly different anyway. There are probably a few duplicates in there, but
there are a few pairs. There's quite a few. I mean, there seem to be trends. They're all speakers that someone has thrown away. So I've been collecting them on the streets of London for many, many years. Some of them came from Berlin when I did a piece over there. I got sponsorship from a recycling company, and they gave me quite a lot, which I brought back with me. And then for this piece, because it was a large space, I didn't feel like the 250 speakers I had was quite enough. So I got the recycling company Veolia here in London to volunteer some of their discarded speakers.
So. Okay, so do you keep all the speakers? I mean, are they stored somewhere?
I have been keeping them, yes. I have a very large garage space.
Right, I'll bet you do, yeah. Okay, but the installation is not just visual. It's obviously a sound installation, which relies on three specific ingredients, should we put it. There's a pianola, which is hidden, really, behind the speakers. It's almost like, it's a little bit like a sort of church organ in a way, isn't it?
Well, you might say that. I'm trying not to sort of impose sort of metaphorical things like that on the piece myself, because I'm really happy when people do it like you've just done and say, oh, it reminds me of a church organ, or it reminds me of the New York skyline, or whatever, you know, kind of thing. I'm really happy when people do that, but I don't want to kind of impose that myself.
Okay.
But the pianola is one element of the sound. And the pianola is being played, for people who don't know, pianola is a player piano, turn of the century invention that's normally played by pumping your feet. There are versions that have electric suction devices built into them, but they're quite a bit more rare than the one I've used, which is a pedal-powered one.
All right.
I've replaced the pedal power, since I can't employ someone to sit there all day and pedal. I've replaced that performer with a vacuum cleaner, which is banished outside the gallery, not for sort of aesthetic reasons, but because it's just too noisy.
All right.
I'd be happy for its presence to be in the space, but it would just sort of make making a subtle piece impossible.
But the hose from the vacuum cleaner kind of snakes its way through the speakers and up to the back, and it sort of what should we call it, quivers a bit or something. As the suction varies, this sort of plastic tube seems to have a bit of a life of its own, doesn't it?
That was a happy accident, really. I mean, I had to find a way of extending the hose, and I, along with chemo, did quite a bit of research in suction hoses. I know something about them now.
Right.
And so we had to get one that was A, affordable, and B, would be the right diameter not to affect the suction negatively over a 35-meter run.
All right.
But when we got it in and plugged it all together, we switched it on, found that it was sort of doing this kind of movement through the space, which is a nice element to it, actually.
Okay, so you've got the player piano, which is a very old, it's like an old upright kind of piano, isn't it?
You
can see all the front panel is off, so you can see the pumps moving, and the keys just move. They play a tune without a performer, of course. You can see the paper roll going through. And then there are two other sound elements.
Yeah, the other elements are a 32-channel, essentially computer composition that I've made, which uses sounds that while I was working in the space, I was kind of listening to the sounds that reach that space from beyond its walls. So the gallery is right next to the busy train line between Waterloo and Vauxhall. And so the trains are quite, quite loud, and it also happens to be on a curve, so that the train wheels kind of grind on the tracks and make this amazing sound. So I kind of worked in the space synthesizing sounds that weren't exactly trying to imitate those sounds, but were kind of work with those sounds that kind of there are times when you're not sure whether you're hearing outside or inside, but it's not because I'm trying to imitate them, and I didn't sample those sounds. I kind of actually made synthesized sounds from scratch. So the computer composition consists of those sounds, plus I also recorded the pianola in the space. So, you know, put the microphone on the other side of the room and played a note and recorded that sort of long reverberation time. So the computer composition consists of those sounds and the synthesized sounds, and that runs along with the pianola. And
so there's a sort of mixture of the sounds where you can't necessarily define the edges of each one. They're merging.
There are nice things that happen. The piece is quite indeterminate because the third element that we've talked about a little bit so far is the sort of ambient sounds that reach the space. And because there's no synchronization per se between where the music role is and where the computer part is, and of course what's happening outside that reaches the space sound wise, it's quite sort of indeterminate where what happens when, and the piece sort of will never repeat because of that.
Should we hear a bit of the installation now?
We could. This isn't the greatest recording. It's a quick one I did yesterday when I knew I was coming in here. I haven't sort of had time to make a proper recording yet, but this gives some idea.
Mm. Okay, we had a slight glitch at the beginning of that.
Some unidentified sound that wasn't part of the installation.
Exactly, some sort of gremlin sort of happened or appeared, whatever you describe it. So we're hearing now a recording you made...
Just quickly yesterday in the space, yeah. So it's not a great recording. It's also a relatively quiet piece. I mean, it has some intensity because there's some very low frequencies I've used that won't come across on the radio either. But in general, it's played at quite a low level so that, A, the acoustic piano works well as a mix, but also it's meant for people to be able to hear the sounds from outside because they're very much this sort of third element, as you put it.
Yeah. So we could talk about the piece itself. The pianola piece is from an operetta by Leha. Is that from when? 1905?
1909, I believe. I've read different things, 1908, 1909, anyway. Franz Lehár, yes, who apparently was Hitler's favorite composer. I've heard that he would say that Wagner was his favorite composer, but in fact he found Wagner a bit too highbrow and bum-numbing, as one of my colleagues put it, and actually preferred Lehár.
Okay, and is that why you chose him?
That wasn't why I chose him, actually. it's an interesting story, actually. It's an interesting sort of chance element in some ways of the piece. The piece that I'm playing is called Gypsy Love, which is this operetta he wrote in 1909. He was... basically, the thing he got known for at that time was these Viennese operettas he was writing. He stayed in Vienna throughout the Second World War, despite having a Jewish wife. And one of his librettists was Jewish and actually killed at Auschwitz. But in 1940, he received the Goethe Award from Hitler. Anyway, that's all sort of by the by in one sense, but interesting kind of background information that has come out in the piece. But my reason for choosing that particular piece was quite practical and mundane, I suppose. I was given, when I started the project, Rex Lawson, who's this amazing pianola performer and expert who's actually worked with Conlon Nancarrow and he's going to be performing on the 24th, sort of within my installation.
Yeah. Shall we give that a bit of a plug now?
I think I just did, but...
Well, I could give more details. On 24th of September at 7 p.m., Rex Lawson will give a rare performance of Conlon Nancarrow's Studies for Player Piano, and we'll join Ed Baxter and John Wynn in a discussion on sound art, player pianos, and cultural redundancy. Admission £5. That's the 24th of September at 7 o'clock. Cultural redundancy. Any thoughts on this? Is this to do with could it be? I mean, there is no performer with this piece, of course. Is this something to do with the redundancy of the performer?
Well, I think that's an element within it. Yeah, the idea. Right now, I'm reading a Kurt Vonnegut novel, which I wasn't even aware of before I started this project, called Player Piano, It was written in 1952 in this sort of dystopic future he imagines, where everyone's being replaced by machines. And the player piano is actually, so far, I'm about halfway through the novel. It's only appeared once, but I'm imagining it's going to appear again. But I think for him, and also for William Gaddis, who wrote a book called Agape Agape, which Paul Noble ran into the other day and told me about this book that I wasn't aware of either. Gaddis was collecting a lot of information about player pianos, and the last book he wrote was Agape Agape, which is this kind of drug-addled, because he was dying and was on sort of heavy medication, kind of drug-addled rant about mechanization and about And he sort of uses the player piano as this kind of ultimate symbol of where it all started and the kind of...
Beginning
of mechanization and the whole sort of on-off binary computer world that's kind of grown from that.
Right. I mean, last week I played an extract of an interview with Nancarrow with Charles Amakanian, and in that in the interview, Nancarrow talks about the tension that arrives with using live performance. Basically, if someone has to hit a note, you're waiting for them to hit that note, and you hope they're going to hit it at the right time. There's a certain tension, whereas with a pianola, there is a sort of absence of that anxiety.
Yeah. That's an interesting way of looking at it. It's also one of the things I was thinking about today, too, about a difference between... I mean, one of the things that Nancarrow was interested in the pianola for was to be able to play things faster than a human
right.
could play them.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've done with my pianola that took me quite a lot of time was modifying it to play extremely slowly. So, in fact, it plays this this piano transcription of Lehár's operetta.
Right.
It plays it through over the course of a day. So it takes a whole day to get through the paper roll, which would normally, I don't know, it contains something like 10 or 12 songs in the overture and things like that.
You've slowed it down by modifying the piano.
That's right, yeah. It works on a gear system, or at least the part that turns the paper, which determines the tempo of the music. It runs on a gear system, so I replaced one of the gears with a much larger gear, so it's turning the paper much more slowly than
right.
the mechanism thinks it is.
Right.
But that took quite a lot of experimentation to get that right.
Do you want to play a bit of the original Lehár? Or?
Oh, well, we could. It's pretty dreadful, but...
okay.
Let's have a blast of it.
Yeah. Are you in control of that one?
I think so, yes.
Okay, I think we'll get rid of that quick. We've played that one out quickly.
Yeah,
it's just pretty dreadful.
Someone suggested to me though that I can be happy that Hitler would have hated what I've done with Lehár. So
right, okay. Well, let's just I suppose we could reiterate the details of this ongoing show. Today's guest has been John Wynne, sound artist, and he is the author or designer and director or whatever of the Soundtrap 4 at Beaconsfield Gallery, and that runs from the 10th of September to the 18th of October. Sound installation incorporating 300 speakers and a player piano, a vacuum cleaner, and a computer generated composition. Is that
32 channel computer
right.
composition, yeah.
Okay. And I think you've got a surprise track to play at the end.
I do, yeah, yeah.
Because as it happens, John used to host the show called Up Country here on Resonance for about 3 years. And you're going to play a song to do with skunks, I think.
I am, yeah. Can I take the liberty of dedicating it to a couple of people? Is that allowed on Resonance?
Well, or? I hope you're not looking at me.
not dedicated in that sense.
Oh, I see.
Dedicated to people that I think would appreciate it.
Absolutely, yeah. So, go ahead.
It's for my friend, dear old friend John McAllister in Botswana, and for Denise Havricio in Vancouver.
Okay, take it away.
It's a song by Loudon Wainwright III, who was Rufus Wainwright's father.
Right.
And I almost hesitate to play it because it's a bit of a sort of gimmick song, and it's guaranteed to be stuck in your head for the rest of the day. And I think those sort of songs do tend to give country music a bad name, but I think this
But you
this
want
song,
to play it anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, here we go.
crossing the highway late last night. He should have looked left and he should have looked right. He didn't see the station wagon car. The skunk got squashed and there you are. You got your dead skunk in the middle of the road. Dead skunk in the middle of the road. Dead skunk in the middle of the road. Stinking to high heaven. Take a whiff on me, that ain't no rose. Roll up your window and hold your nose. You don't have to look and you don't have to see, 'cause you can feel it in your olfactory. You got your dead skunk in the middle of the road. Dead skunk in the middle of the road. Dead skunk in the middle of the road. And it's stinking to high heaven.
Okay, that was Dead Skunk in the Middle of the Road.
Yeah, I apologize for bringing the tone of proceedings down so far.
Well, we try and end up on a sort of high note. That's quite a nice thing to do. And John has suggested that we give the event at Beacon's Field another mention, because it might, what was it going to sell out, you think?
Well, I don't know, but because my installation takes up quite a lot of room in the space, we might have to limit the numbers. So
okay.
If people are going, it'd be a good idea to go to the gallery website and contact them, book a place.
So that's the 24th of September at 7 o'clock. Rex Lawson giving a rare performance of Conlon Nancarrow's Studies for Player Piano, joined by Ed Baxter and John Wynne in a discussion on sound art, player pianos and cultural redundancy. Admission £5, bookings at beaconsfield.limited.uk. So if you want to go to that, you should book soon. Thanks very much for John Wynne, sound artist, for coming in and discussing his installation at the Beaconsfield Gallery as part of, what is it, the Soundtrap series. That was Soundtrap 4. Okay, thanks very much, John.
Thank you. London's International